Welcome back to the Craftsman's Collective, a podcast designed to help makers in the concrete, wood, and steel industries improve their businesses and lives by discussing our common struggles, tips we found along the way, and how we can combine our unique perspectives to create even more spectacular pieces. Today's episode is a little bit different. Usually I have a guest on and we talk about their trials and tribulations and things that they've found that were beneficial to them. I rarely talk about any of the stuff that I've come across that has been tremendously helpful to me. The main reason is because the podcast episode is about them. It's not about me. Most of them, I really had no intention of doing many of these episodes to begin with. But as I've become a little bit more public facing, which is not really ideal, I don't prefer it, but I've had people asking me questions about certain things, and I figured I'd do one episode and push everything out all at one time. So that we don't really have to revisit it again and people know where I stand on these different things. The way I have this situated is I have a ton of notes here. So if I look off to the side, if you're watching this on YouTube or if you're listening, you won't be able to tell. I have this separated into categories of health, and that is broken down by physical, diet, sleep, mental. And then I talk about different things that I found that are very helpful in the shop. Different things that I found very helpful as far as design specifically goes, and then personal, and then on to productive, efficient, and schedule type things. I'm going to be mentioning a ton of books and resources and podcasts, and there'll be some things that I don't even put up on the screen that I'll have to find tags to after the fact. So if I talk about anything that you find particularly interesting, there will be a link in the show notes for pretty much everything. So if you're looking for something specific, check the chapters and the show notes for those particular things. These are things that have had a really big impact for me. They may be counterproductive for where you find yourself in life. These are just take what you can benefit from, leave the rest. I'm going to try and keep my enthusiasm for some of these as minimal as possible because I want everybody to approach these with a very open mind. I don't want to build any one of them up to be a certain impact level, if you will, and then somebody get benefit, but not as much as they expected, and then be a little disappointed. Andrew Huberman talks about this, where if we go into a restaurant, for example, and we have just kind of a neutral position, we have a higher chance of being satisfied, as opposed to if somebody talks it up really high, then they're a little frustrated. If it doesn't meet their expectations. I'm going to do this all in one episode. Then for the people who have attention spans of gnats, you know who you are. I'm going to cut this up and do per section in its own individual little video. However you want to watch it, I'll put tags and cards and all that kind of stuff in each one. Each category has some things that overlap in other categories, so I'm just going to quickly highlight those each time for the different categories, but I'm going to gloss over those. And then when they're in the category that I explain, I'll obviously go into greater detail. First category is health and the physical side of things. So the things that have had the greatest impact for me are going to be meditation, breathing, so a hot shower version of those, and then a cold plunge. The cold plunge is a different thing that has both helpful for the breathing and a mental aspect. And then something called gut smashing. Those I will go over in greater detail in a different category. The things that have helped me the most are fixing muscle imbalances and increasing my flexibility. The main thing that I used was knees over toes or the Athletic Truth Group. Again, links to in the description. I was able to see a pretty drastic improvement in lower back pain and some knee problems that I was having. I did the Knee Ability Zero program. It helped a lot. I kind of fell off the wagon and I need to get back on it, but it really helped my lower back pain go away. And that really helped in the shop because there's a lot of like leaning over things, moving things, lifting things, and then moving around. The other thing that helped a lot is getting really strong and good at movements in the gym, such as deadlifts, both the sumo version and the traditional or Olympic versions of those. That's going to help you pick things up off the ground. Farmer's carries and suitcase carries, those are going to be where you hold something down beside you and basically walk and carry heavy weight. Those are obvious. If you're picking up a bag of Portland cement, for example, and carrying that around, those are going to help with that. front squat, which is where you're going to have the weight on the front. So if you have a piece and you're trying to flip that piece over, front squat's going to help with that, as well as the military press. And then, of course, working everything with the spine and your core muscles, that will help considerably. Making sure that you're really flexible in your legs, that will help with your lower back pain quite a bit. That's what helped me a lot with the knees over toes program. Another concept that helped me quite a bit is called greasing the grooves by Pavel Tsatsulin, I think is how you pronounce it. This concept is basically where anytime you have like some free time or there's something that you can do in transition of some kind, that you can add in an exercise of some kind. So in our industry, for example, you can have a partially batched out batch in a bucket, for example, and you can do several curls on that. You can carry those buckets from one point to another, and that's farmer's carry, for example. If you have a gantry in your shop, you could do a couple pull-ups every time you walk by it. That's not going to add any time onto what you're doing, is if you have to walk from, say, your miter saw over to your casting table and the gantry is in between, hop up and do two pull-ups. Or if you have a set of rings on there, you can do a couple upright rows. You could do a goblet squat with a bag of sand. All these different things that we can add in very, very seamlessly into our days that it's very, very simple. It's very easy for us to do. And it's just as simple as somebody pointing it out. And then you'll see these options pop up everywhere. It's a really, really good way to build some strength, especially since a lot of the stuff that we have to do is heavy and requires a decent amount of flexibility. I want to close out this section with saying that no, making concrete, even a lot of it, does not count as a workout. I see that pop up in the forums quite a bit. That is a repetitive motion, and we use the same muscles every single time we do those. You're basically going to be building up a certain part of your body, and all your antagonistic muscles are basically just going to get weaker, and you're going to start getting some really problems. That's the problem that I was running into with my knee pain and lower back pain, is my quads were getting lots of motion, lots of work, and constantly leaning over the casting table, and that was causing problems. Well, once you start working on the flexibility of the hamstrings, your hip flexors, and all those types of things, those problems start to kind of fix themselves because the muscles are pulling on each other properly. This is the health and the diet aspect of this. This is one thing that did quite a bit of help for me. The thing that was helpful in this category, but I'm going to talk about it more in detail in another one, is an elimination diet. Again, I'll talk about that in more detail in a different section. My wife and I, we have used the internet to our benefit quite substantially in this category. We use a meal delivery service. My wife uses Factor. We've used Freshly, I think she uses. I eat more than she does, so I can't really do that. It would be astronomically expensive for me to do those services. So we use those for her on some of her meals, and that has helped considerably. She's able to eat healthier, more consistently, and it takes a lot of time. It frees up a lot of time in her schedule that she doesn't have to allocate towards making a grocery list, finding recipes, going to get things, getting it through, getting it and cooking it, and all these other things. It frees up a substantial amount of time, where if you have the liquid resources to do that, I would recommend looking into that as far as using one of those meal delivery services. The ones where they're already made for you, you just have to heat them up. Not the ones where it's like a Blue Apron where they send you all the ingredients and you still make it. That helps a little bit, but we found that the time savings on that wasn't really worth it. The next thing that we do is we use Chipped, Amazon, and Whole Foods grocery delivery a lot. I mean, my wife still goes to the grocery store way too much, but we have freed up so much time using Shipt, and let's see, she uses it for Target, so we get a lot of groceries from there. That's where we primarily get our eggs. On Amazon, I get our ghee and Jocko Goes, which are energy drinks. More on that later. We take advantage of the subscribe and save. Reason being is because I can order 5 cases of those and get 15% off. So not only am I getting it delivered to me, I don't have to find it. But I'm saving that additional cost doing it that way. We also do Whole Foods, and we have them bring us produce and bacon are the main things that we get from Whole Foods. The other thing that we use the internet for is getting access to other high quality ingredients that we can't easily access here. My favorites are White Oak Pastures in Georgia. You can get grass-fed, grass-finished, regenerative agriculture meats. They have some other things too, but I pretty much only do the meats. Force of Nature is also really good, and Butcher Box is also pretty good. If you're trying to support regenerative agriculture, Force of Nature and White Oak Pastures are the two that I have on here that are that. Both are grass-fed, grass-finished. And Butcher Box is grass-fed, grass-finished. A talk about diet cannot go without talking about water. I'm here in Florida, so things get very, very, very hot. The thing that I found that worked the best was deciding how much water I want to drink and then dividing that by 32 ounces or 64 ounces. So if you want to do a gallon of water a day, that's 128 ounces. So you can do two 64-ounce bottles. Or four 32 ounces. It's much, much easier to carry around 32 ounce bottles than the 64s. If I'm in the shop, I will use the 64 ounce bottles. I don't really have to move them around a whole lot, so I don't have to worry about carrying a heavy jug around. That's just what I do. I found that that's very, very beneficial. My goal is in the winter to do half a gallon a day, which is 64 ounces. And so that's just mixing up one of those water bottles, and I just need to make sure that I end up drinking that by the end of the day. In the summer, I'll try and get a gallon. I'll try and do one 64-ounce bottle and two 32 ounces, or I'll do two 64-ounce bottles or fill the same one up twice. That's just what has worked for me. There's a Andrew Huberman podcast episode that really goes into electrolytes. You can add salt to your water. I used to do this, but it doesn't have any flavoring, and I usually do a really shitty job of putting enough in there. So it either tastes like salt water, which tastes terrible, or I don't know that I put enough. So what I've started to do is I use a company called Element. You may have heard about them. They're sponsoring quite a few podcasts right now. I really like doing their raspberry and orange together in a 64-ounce bottle of water. I really love that flavor combination. I'll try and put a code up for everyone. It'll probably be using somebody else's podcast one, but you can get a free sample pack, and that's a pretty good idea of picking out which flavors you like. All right, then on to caffeine. After Andrew Huberman recommended waiting at least 90 minutes after waking to do the caffeine, that has helped with that afternoon crash quite a bit. I don't really know all the mechanisms at play. It has to do something with your adenosine, kind of getting access to those receptor ports. If you don't flush all of it out in the morning, you'll just need to check that podcast episode for him. He explains it way better than I can. The caffeine source that I use are the Jocko Go's, like I mentioned earlier. The reason I like these as opposed to others are, even though I love sugar, sugar creates its own problems. So it doesn't have any sugar in it. It has an amazing flavor. I prefer the Tropical Crush, I think is the... I'll have to look up the flavor and put it in the show notes, but I really like that it only has 95 milligrams of caffeine. I don't need a whole bunch of caffeine. That also makes it to where I can do one in the morning after the 90 minutes, and then I can do another one a little bit later if I want, just because it's only 95 milligrams. It's not like an energy drink where it's like 300 in one. If you're a coffee drinker, then I don't know what to tell you. I hate coffee. Sorry. All right, like I mentioned, there's going to be a lot of resources in this particular episode. The three cookbooks that my wife and I have found that are the most beneficial and we use the most are, let's see if it zoom in on this, Sheet Pan Suppers, but I guess I'll say who it's by, Molly Gilbert. This one is amazing for cooking on the Grill, Charred and Scruffed by Adam Perry. And then Soups and Stews, and it's by America's Test Kitchen. Again, all the links will be in the descriptions. The reason I like these the most is because I can make a whole bunch of things at once. And I don't have to be cooking every single day of the week. I can make a whole bunch at once. And the recipes in there work really, really well. Things that are in alignment with the diet that I follow, I'll talk more about that later. But two resources for that are Mark Sisson. And his book is, well, one of his books is Two Meals a Day. This one is really helpful because it utilizes a lot of the things that I prefer to eat. I haven't used too many of the recipes in there. The other is the Carnivore Code cookbook by Paul Saladino. And again, I'm going to talk about why that particular type of diet is I've found most beneficial later. All right, on to the next category of health. And the subcategory for this is sleep. I do not subscribe to the school of thought where you work 1,000 hours a week and that's beneficial. I've gotten to see in close proximity the difference between having a very good solid sleep schedule and being very smart about how you work and just going just crazy, like 24-hour days, 36-hour days, going on 3, 4, 5, 6 hours of sleep a night. I'm not saying that some people can't do that for a certain period of time or that those people are bad or anything like that. All I'm saying is that the research does not suggest that people can do that and maintain a good quality of life or a high standard of living. People can take that for what they want, but I would highly recommend try it. Go 2 weeks, 3 weeks with some really good quality sleep consistently and see if you can see a difference. I would be surprised if you did not see a notable improvement in almost every area of your life. So something that has been helpful in this category, but I'm going to talk about it in more detail later, is the hot shower meditation. So the things that have helped the most with sleep are putting dimmers on lights. This sounds maybe a little trivial, but we try and turn as many overhead lights off as possible. That has to do with the receptors that are in the bottom of your eyes. Because the sun is typically above you, those receptors tell you it's daytime, it's time to be awake. So if you turn those lights off, those receptors aren't getting that signal that it's time to be awake. The dimmers help because if you were outside, it'd be starting to get dark, obviously. But we've put switches in the walls in all of the main living areas, in our living room, in the kitchen, in our bedroom, in our bathroom. All of those light switches that are primary light switches that will be on have a dimmer on them. All of the lamps that we use that are on in the evening times all have dimmer, these little cord. You plug part of it into the wall, and then you plug the lamp into that plug, and then there's like a little toggle that you can dim the lights. We have those, I think we've got 4 or 5 of them. We use those every single day, every single night. They are amazing. Like I mentioned earlier, gut smashing. This is a really weird sounding thing. I will put a link to a video in the show notes because I don't really know how to explain it that well. The reason it's very helpful is most of us, at least in Western cultures, walk around with our stomach sucked in virtually all day, trying to look skinnier, more appealing, that type of thing. That builds up a lot of stress and tension in your, basically in your core all day long for years and years and years and years and years. So what this does is you basically lay on like a lacrosse size ball or maybe a softball or something like that. Actually, I don't know if it's a lacrosse ball. You lay on like a softball of some kind, like a big ball. They make a specific ball for it. I don't know if it's worth the cost, but you lay on that and it basically smashes, it smashes your core, and it is, while you're doing it, very uncomfortable. But it forces you to breathe and relax and let go of that tension. This was one thing that was very surprising to me, that how beneficial it was. I forget to do it quite often, but when I do remember to do it, you can just feel the release of that tension pretty much immediately right after doing it. Next is I don't do any emails, social media, screens of any kind 2 hours before bed. One of the recommendations is you can go to up to 1 hour before bed, but I just do it 2 hours because there's not really any point. I do deviate from this from time to time if Melanie and I are going to watch a movie or something together at night. But that's, I mean, that might happen once a week. Like I rarely deviate from this. These things helped a lot, but they're more in the mental section, which is coming next. So something that was helpful for sleep is no email after noon to 2 p.m. ish. Again, I'll talk about that later. And then no social after 4:30 or 5. The exception to this is my personal Instagram account, and I'll talk about more on that later. The resource for this one is a book called Why We Sleep by Dr. Matt Walker. Amazing book. It goes into a lot of detail as far as how everything works with sleep, why it works the way that it does, and then several different recommendations on how to accomplish that. You can also check out all sorts of different podcasts. Matt Walker's been on several. He's been on with Tim Ferriss here recently. Really, really good resource. I would highly recommend looking into that if you are interested in increasing the quality of your sleep. Next section is health, the mental side of things. I have had a pretty gnarly run into with depression, not really, I mean, imposter syndrome, I mean, everything dealing with not being in a good headspace for many, 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 many years. So I don't want to build these things up to be monumental things, but these things helped considerably. I'm gonna try and calmly do these, but these have made a huge, huge, huge impact in my life. One of the things that was helpful, but I'm gonna talk about it more in another category, are having two phones, which is a nice first world privilege, I guess you could say. If you have the resources, I would recommend looking into having two different phones, and one for the stupid shit that you do. And the other one for more practical reasons. One thing that I have started to use as much as I can, I do it in the evening, so it's not uncommon for me to miss it. Like if Melanie and I are on different schedules, like if she goes to bed a little bit earlier or I'm up working a little bit later, I usually have to skip this just because it's not really fair to her to keep her awake, but is a hot shower meditation. We have a rain shower head right in the middle of our shower. And I'll just sit there underneath that until the hot water runs out and just sit there and think. Reflect on what happened that day. Reflect on things that I'm thinking about. I'll do it with maybe some design thinking. I'll talk about that in the design section. But that has helped a lot to kind of really just work through problems. Think about your thinking. Why am I thinking this? Why is this problem giving me a problem? Really try to analyze why those things are giving me problems. That has helped a lot. In the beginning, it was really helpful to use an app. Calm and Headspace are two apps that I found that were really quite helpful, especially if you don't have any experience with meditation of any kind. Those are really good resources, and they're relatively cheap considering how much benefit they can have. Like I mentioned earlier, I don't do email after noon or 2 p.m.-ish. The reason that is for both mental and sleep. And as humans, we don't like having open loops in the back of our mind. So if you read an email and you cannot close out that loop, it's going to weigh at you pretty much until you do. It could be on a subconscious level or a conscious level, but I found that it was just eating away at me if I wasn't able to close that thought out. So the reason it's such a big time gap is because usually when I stop to do a snack in the middle of the day is when I'll check that. And then if I find something that I need to take care of, then I will take care of it right then and there. and then I don't check my email the rest of the day. I don't want any of those open loops affecting my sleep, and I don't want to be thinking about them when I need to be thinking or focusing on something else. One thing that's helped considerably with keeping my mental state not from being trash is keeping social media under control, which sounds obvious, but it is what it is. So I don't do any, in air quotes, social media after 4:30 or 5. That's at the point when we usually go pick the girls up from school. And so there's not really any point in me doing social media after that. Even though the direction that we're going right now is very social media centered, I try to limit that quite drastically. The exception to this is my personal Instagram account. And the reason that that's an exception is because I am ruthless on what accounts are allowed to be followed on that account. It's essentially only Japanese street photography. It's really all it is. I love Japan. I miss going there so much. It's very calming for me to look at those photos. That's my goal, is to be able to go back there. So I have nothing but good feelings as I'm scrolling through and seeing that. That's the only reason that that's an exception. I am very quick to unfollow and block people who either want to attack or anything that's causing problems. Like, I have complete control over my social media, and I don't allow anyone to negatively impact that. It doesn't make any sense to me why someone's social media would be creating anxiety for them. The unfollow and the block buttons are half a screen away. Utilize them. The other thing that I've done that has worked out really, really well is similar to the two phone method that I was talking about earlier, is having many different social media accounts and having them in different categories. I'll talk about that at the end of these categories, but that has worked really, really well. The things that have helped me the most, and this is, I'm gonna go like really off the cuff with this, so just kind of follow me here, is having those depressive thoughts of being completely and utterly worthless. Feeling that every single thing that you put out into the world, regardless of what other people are telling you, these feelings that it's just complete trash or that you're a worthless human. Like, that was my daily thought pattern for years. I would look out into the world and everything would be gray. There were very few brightly colored areas, so to speak. It was not a fun time. And so I want to highlight these three things because these three things had a huge impact on me. I cannot over, like, again, I'm hesitant to say how amazing these things are just in case somebody doesn't experience the life-changing things or experiences that I had with these, but these are my three big things that I am huge proponents of that have helped me way beyond what I expected them to do. The first is elimination diet. I went with an animal-based. This is described by Paul Saladino. It is essentially eating nothing but basically meats and fruit and berries and things like that. I will eat other things as well, but my ability to handle those depressive thoughts, I mean, virtually disappeared. It only took like 3 days of switching to this diet for me to notice a huge, huge change in my mental clarity and ability to fight off those thoughts. I'm not saying that that would happen to you. I'm just saying, whatever was causing me problems was most likely, well, at least in large part, due to diet. Again, those two, just in case I cut this up, the two things are The Carnivore Code by Paul Saladino, and he goes into several recipes and on there, and Mark Sisson. Those are the two resources that I have used, and then I've found variations to some of those meals and other books like I mentioned in the diet section. The other thing is a cold plunge. This is essentially hopping in a cold body of water for whatever time you pick and staying there basically neck down, not staying completely still because what apparently you build up a thermal layer around you, so you need to keep the water moving. Anytime you see these people sitting like stoics in a ice bath or whatever, while that does suck really bad, they're doing it on easy mode for that particular situation because if they're not moving, they have that nice thermal layer around them. So the reason I'm doing the cold plunge is not for the health benefits of it, which are very well documented scientifically and all the different things that it's helpful with. While that is nice, and I would have to do some blood work to find out if I'm getting a lot of those benefits, I'm doing it for the mental aspect. It makes the rest of the day and some of the stupid decisions that you have to make so easy. Well, the decisions aren't necessarily easy, but dealing with them are so easy compared to that stupid fucking cold water. I hate cold. And cold water is just brutal for me. But it makes all the other trivial stuff that we go through just seem even more trivial. It really has helped so much. And I know people have been watching on my social media and been asking me questions. I'm a huge proponent. I'm still working on getting it colder, but it's brutal. And the last thing is reframing. And I've heard it called several different things, but it's essentially when something comes in and you are, let's say that you're on the receiving end of somebody giving you a critique or somebody's just trolling you, for example. Reframing that would be looking at that, like, why is that person doing this? Is it about me? Is it about them? Is it about, did I touch on something that is personal to them? I'll kind of touch on this a little bit later when I get to the design section, but understanding that, I heard the quote in a podcast episode that the guy said, nobody is against you, they're for themselves. And so a lot of times when somebody attacks you, it's trying to preserve their thought pattern, or you have struck a nerve with them, or they're projecting something onto you that really doesn't have anything to do with you. And it took me a really long time to kind of understand this. But now that I'm in a little bit more of a public-facing role, and there's plenty of people that have criticisms about the podcast and things that I'm doing on here, a lot of people are projecting onto me these things that they assume that I know, or my intent, or those types of things. So I've had to deal with that. And that has kind of accelerated this learning how to reframe quite drastically, actually. And it has made a huge improvement on like how quickly I turn around from basically people talking trash or whatever version that you'd like to have of that. So learning how to do that is really, really beneficial. So the three resources for this, as far as books are concerned, that I found that were the most beneficial are, the first one is Tribe of Mentors by Tim Ferriss. The second one is Tools of Titans, also by Tim Ferriss. And then one of the ones that, depending on your personality, you may or may not like is Discipline Equals Freedom by Jocko Willink. This might kind of rub several people the wrong way if you don't like that a little bit more in-your-face approach. I really like it. It jives really well with my personality. So it just meshes with me and my philosophy quite well. Some podcasts that I would recommend. Modern Wisdom is quite good. You can find some pretty good information on Joe Rogan's podcast, obviously. Sometimes you have to sift through some episodes to find some that are going to be helpful to you. Tim Ferriss's podcast is a little hit or miss as far as things that you can gain to actually be useful to you. But there's some nuggets in pretty much every episode. So if you really like the person that he's talking to, it's worth a listen. Debbie Millman is another good podcast to listen to for a lot of different things. Design Matters, I think, is the name of it. after I had gotten done recording the main episode, I realized that I completely forgot two of the things that I've started to do here recently. I wasn't really sure if I was going to include them in the episode or not, and then by the time I decided that I was going to add them in, I had forgotten to write them down on the big, massive list of notes that I had. So I'm going through and recording this and adding it in. But the two things that I've started to do here recently are utilizing mental triggers. I'm sure there's a scientific term for it, but that's just what I'm kind of referring to. And there's two different versions of this for me. One of them is just randomly throughout the day thinking, am I doing the absolute most important thing that I should be doing right now? You may not be like me and you're able to stay focused and stay on task and always really focus on the most important thing. I have this tendency of like shiny object syndrome, I think is what some people call it, where there's this project that I quote unquote need to do, and I've gotten to a point in a project that is maybe a little bit daunting, or I'm procrastinating on it, so that other shiny object looks even shinier, and I gravitate towards that, and I start working on that, and I'll be a third or halfway through that project and wondering, like, why am I working on this and not the most important thing? So I've started to, I don't know how I was able to do this, because I don't utilize an alarm of any kind for this, but it comes up a lot throughout the day of, for some reason, I'm able to just remember this randomly throughout the day and really ask myself that question so that I can get recentered on what I should be working on. Apparently, they make apps that do like random alarms throughout the day. If you don't know that you could, like if you want to try this and you don't know that you'll do this mental prompt throughout the day, I've never used any of those apps, so I don't really know how well they work, but I would assume it's something pretty easy for somebody to make. That might be something worth looking into. The other is the using, like as soon as I notice that I'm kind of arguing with somebody in my head or have really shitty self-talk for whatever reason, like let's just say I'm having a bad day or something like that. As soon as I realize that I'm doing that, and sometimes I'll go 15, 20, 30 minutes, sometimes even longer of going through that cycle before I even realize that I'm doing it again. And as soon as I notice that, I will either think of the previous prompt, am I doing the most important thing that I should be doing right now? Or the other version of it is, why is this bothering me? Is there some truth to what the other person said? Is there a thing that I'm trying to bolster in myself that I either feel a deficit in, or there's something there that I should probably pay attention to? Not all the time. Sometimes it's just me being a weak mental weenie and I need to address that. If there is something there where like I feel that I should be better at X, I go back to the notebooks. I have notebooks everywhere. I'll write that down in a notebook and I will address that as soon as I can when it's most practical. One of the things that's helped me quite a bit with even noticing to do these triggers is meditation. I know I've mentioned it throughout this episode. It's been a while since I've recorded it. And I know that's in some other episodes as well. And some people kind of look at it kind of side-eyed, or it just doesn't have a very good the marketing surrounding meditation has just been, for Western cultures, has just not been the best. Doing meditation helps decrease that time of when I start doing some of those activities or those thought patterns, and the amount of time it takes me to realize that I am doing them. And the more consistent I am with the meditation, that time shrinks considerably. And if you don't want to do that, then maybe using that random alarm app, there's a bunch of them. I just looked at them real quickly. I would use one of those then if you don't want to kind of go down the other route of meditation. All right, so for the personal category, most of these have been mentioned in other categories, and there's a lot of overlap with this with the mental section. So I'm not really sure how I'm going to post this particular section because it's pretty small. But one of the things that's helped the most for me is scheduling times and routines for important things. So I'll talk more about this more in the scheduling section. But if there's something that's really important to you, scheduling it is the most surefire way to make sure that it actually happens. Like I mentioned earlier, dimmers on lamps and light switches has really, really helped. Making sure that my sleep is kind of in check has really made a big impact. And that's been one of the biggest levers that I was able to pull. And it's really easy to do, especially with lamps, because all you have to do is plug it into the wall and you're off to the races. If you're not electrically inclined or you don't feel like paying an electrician to put the switches in the walls, I understand that it's probably not cheap to do that, but they're really beneficial. If you can swing it, I would recommend it. So some of the biggest things for me on a personal level is bringing plants inside. Now, some people are going to be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty hippy-dippy and all that good stuff. But there's tons and tons of research on being out in nature and having plants and greenery inside and the benefits that come along with doing that. I think, if I'm not mistaken, even having artificial plants inside has shown to have a pretty tremendous benefit. We had to redo our roof since we're down here in Florida, and it's just crazy dealing with roofs. So we went ahead and put skylights in as well. So I was able to bring in dozens and dozens and dozens of plants. We probably have, I don't know, I'll have to take a look, probably 60 or 70 plants inside. It has made it's so relaxing in our living room, just being there and having the plants all over. Our little girls are getting used to seeing the little plants. They like spraying the plants with me. It's a really good way for me to spend some time with the girls. They like watering the plants, and they like pretending that they're watering with the water cans. So there's a lot of ancillary benefits that have nothing to do really with the plants themselves. My oldest daughter has her own little spray bottle, and she goes around and mists the plants. I really want for them to have an appreciation for nature and taking care of the things around us. I think it's easy in our culture to forget how important these things are, and they're very calming having them inside. I get not wanting to maintain them or deal with them, so maybe artificial plants are maybe the route that you want to go, but that's been amazing having all the plants inside. The other really big thing that has helped me a lot is having many different social media accounts. In conjunction with that, like I mentioned earlier, is I unfollow any account that makes me feel bad or anxious or angry or any of those things. If somebody's posting something and it's they're taking a very accusatory tone and they're really just talking down to people, or they talk about how good they are and how stupid other people are, or constantly bringing up things that bring other people down, I just unfollow them. I respect that it's their account and they can do whatever they want, but that doesn't mean that I'm obligated to interact or see it. So I'm pretty quick to distance myself from that. I do want to clarify that the reason that for me that there's a difference between this and just being mentally weak, like, oh, I don't want to deal with different viewpoints. I'm not talking about somebody who intellectually challenges me or puts something up that's intellectually challenging. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about it when there's a clear divisive spin to it. Those are the ones that I don't have any intention of dealing or interacting with. Again, like I mentioned earlier, the things that have helped me a lot with this are the hot shower meditations and cold plunges specifically. The cold plunging has helped immensely, and it's really helped with the different social media problems that have kind of popped up. So for example, my account, I have one for the main business. The plant side of the main business has an account of its own. The podcast has one of its own, although it's not active. It doesn't have anything on it yet. I have one for gathering inspiration, and then I have one that is just for me and the things that I love, which is basically the Japanese street photography is pretty much all that's on there. I'm sure that there will be more in the future, but I separate those out so that I am in a very specific mindset when I'm on them, and I'm on there for a very specific thing. The main reason I do not combine the business account and my personal account is because when I'm on there, I want to be for a very specific reason. I don't want to be caught scrolling when that's not what I'm on there for. If I'm on there to do business related things, I want to get on there, do what I need to do, and then get off. These companies have spent way too much money figuring out how to keep us on there, and I'm not strong enough to figure out how to combat that other than I go on there, I do my thing, I get off. And that has helped immensely. I've spent so much less time on social media, and I've had very little mental impact from them because of my ruthless elimination of them. This section is probably going to be the most controversial of all those sections. Everything else, people can argue whether they want to do it or not. But this is the one where people have a pretty closely held belief. So this is my disclaimer. This is my opinion on how I approach design. I've done quite a bit of research on this, and I have found no compelling evidence that's against what I'm about to say. That's not to say that it doesn't exist. I'm just saying this is what it is. If you have a different approach and it works great for you, then I'm happy for you. I mean, that's amazing. Like, to be able to find a way that works for you really well in the design category is really, really amazing. I'm just sharing this because I know that there are a lot of people, well, I can't say that. I can't say that with confidence. I know that there are several people who have had very difficult times with the design aspect because they're looking at it maybe in a way that is not helpful or beneficial to them. So my intention here is to not make anybody feel bad. It's not to say that you're doing it wrong and I'm doing it right. I'm saying this is how I have approached it and how it has helped me considerably. Now, with that being said, this is my approach. So my approach is essentially, or my belief, or I guess you could call it an approach. It's more of a belief, is that it is infinitely more productive to aim for very beautiful and unique pieces than this amorphous idea of original. I don't particularly believe that original in its actual definition really exists in the creative space. It can probably exist in, say, the technology space, but since everything that we make is a derivative or built on everything that has happened before it, it can't truly be original. Now, if you would like to define original as being the first person to combine certain aspects, then fine. That's still technically a remix, but I can understand using it in that sense. Kirby Ferguson, the person who went through and did Everything's a Remix, explains it much better than I can. But that's essentially the idea, is everything that we can make, especially in concrete, is a remix of some kind. So it's much better to focus on making something that is unique and beautiful, because that's a much more tangible thing to actually aim for. Now, that's great, and that's such a high-level amorphous thing, but the question is, okay, but how do you go about doing that? And I think it's actually a lot more simple than people make it out to be. So how do I go about idea generation? This seems to be something that pops up in the forums from time to time, and it seems to be a sticking point for people. I'm going to try and help dispel that a little bit. You can just randomly combine things. Just pick two random things, three random things, and squish them together and kind of see what happens. You can do it on paper. You can visualize it. Take a different style. So what would this look like if I took the contemporary design and I squished it with Scandinavian design? What if I took a sink and combined it with, a piece of furniture, but that's already been done several times, but that's conceptually the same thing. What if I took something from a sci-fi novel and squished it into an end table? What if I took something like a sports car and combined it with a coffee table? Like, what are some different things that you can take with those different, take aspects from those two worlds and smush them together and see, like, what does that look like? That's one way to do it. Social media is your friend. Social media is such a great, great resource for this type of thing. Regardless of what platform you use, there's infinite possibilities of what to look for. I like to use an account specifically on Instagram, specifically for gathering inspiration. I only follow things on there that is for assimilating these somewhat disparate ideas into one cohesive field. This is where I think making a list of your unique interests comes into play. So for example, some of mine are video games, nature, biophilic design, art and anime, and Japan. And then I avoid thinking about original. Doing those things, once I have that list of things, I can figure out, okay, well, how do I combine them? So maybe I can make something new. Maybe I can make a surround for an aquarium or a terrarium of some kind. That's something that is, I've never seen it done. Not to say that somebody hasn't, but that's something that I could do. It takes into consideration my love of nature and making things out of concrete. Like, I can combine those two things. Maybe I could do a water feature of some kind and add in some different elements. Maybe I can combine an aquarium or a terrarium in with a water feature. The combining those things in unique ways allows you to kind of, and once you get used to doing that, it becomes much, much easier. So some resources that I would recommend is looking at other industries. Because what most of the people that listen to this are concrete guys, so we have the benefit of being able to combine so many different things into one thing. We can take sci-fi and we can make a coffee table out of it. We can take traditional designs like contemporary or modern and we can apply them to different things. We can take different geometric shapes and concepts and combine them with vanities and all sorts of different things. We have that benefit. And we can draw on so many different industries that I don't know that focusing primarily on the concrete industry is in our best interest, because most of the best ideas aren't going to come from our small little industry to begin with. Using books and art books is a really good way to get different ideas. Some of the books that I've used that have helped quite a bit are The Practice by Seth Godin. Again, tons and tons of books and resources and shenanigans. Show Your Work by Austin Kleon. Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon, and The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. These are things that have helped considerably for me. And then, of course, art books are going to depend on what type of art you enjoy. I've got everything from digital 3D artist to like Sparth, for example, to different architects, Kengo Kuma, for example. There's tons and tons and tons and tons of different options out there. Get those books so you can have them on hand. You can flip through on a random day and just kind of slowly put them into your subconscious and let your subconscious do the work. That might sound a little hippy-dippy to some people, but you'd be shocked at how well that works. Pay attention when you're watching movies. Look and see if there's something in there that's very interesting that you can assimilate into your design. If you're watching the movie at home, pause the movie and take a picture of it with your phone so that you don't forget. I have tons and tons of pictures of movies of things that I want to try and add into different pieces of furniture, for example. Dylan Myers did this not too long ago where he took a picture where he was out and about and just saw something really cool. I think it was like on a sidewalk or the side of a building or something like that, and took a picture of it, and I think he already used it. That was a while ago. But you can find all sorts of inspiration as you're out just walking down the street. You just have to be more cognizant and mindful of what's going on around you, and not having your head in your phone. That comes from meditation, to be completely honest, is being there in the moment and paying attention to what's going on. So how does this look like tactically? Like, how exactly do you go about doing this? For me, I like to lay on the floor in the shower and just think. I have a waterproof notebook. I don't have it here with me, but I'll put a link. Waterproof notebooks are amazing. You can use just a regular everyday pencil, or they sell pens that work specifically for it. But I just lay on the floor and think and work through these ideas. How can I combine them? I also do the hot shower meditation, but that's a different thing. And just kind of work through those ideas. What can work together? What can I combine these things? Oh, that's an interesting idea. Maybe I should do that later. And then you just jot it down on that notebook. You could just say, Japanese joinery and coffee table, and combine those, and you just have that note, and then you look at that note later. I like to have notebooks everywhere. I've got notebooks in pretty much every room in our house. I have different sizes. I have them for different purposes. Some have blank pages, some have dots, some have lines. I make sure to always have a a notebook somewhere so that if I have an idea, I can jot it down. If I'm out and I don't, I just use the Notes app on my phone, and that works relatively well too. The main thing is just getting all those ideas down on paper. Much higher chance of remembering that later. What I've started to do is actually design items in my head. This took me a really long time to get good at. I mean, this took me 6+ months to get even decent at. Taking all these different ideas and then just sitting there and just going through and kind of moving that item around in 3D space in your mind. Tweaking things. What if I chamfer this edge? What if I add in this detail here? What if I did this type of joinery here? Oh, could I do this? Can I combine this style? And slowly tweak that piece. And then once it gets to a decent enough stage to where I feel confident putting it down on paper or digital, then I'll do so. But I usually like working on things for months just in my head while I'm working on other things that are in the real world, so to speak. That allows me to be working on multiple projects all at one time. And like just when you're standing there in the line at the grocery store, or you're sitting there waiting for your food at a restaurant maybe, you can just sit there and do that design work in your head. It just opens up the door for more chances to come up with more unique thing. I know some people aren't visually capable in that way, so this idea might not even work for you. But I think using SketchUp and Fusion 360 is more ideal than paper, because you can move it around in 3D space and get a really good idea for it. I know some people don't have the resources because those programs, well, Fusion 360 at least, is not exactly cheap. And then, of course, you have the time it takes to learn them. So I'm not saying that everybody can do those. I'm just saying that I think that they're a little bit better. They're helpful, really, really helpful if you can swing it. All right, on to the shop section. There's a lot of items that I could have put in here, but I felt that they fit better in the productivity efficiency section. So I put a whole bunch of stuff in there, or not a whole bunch. I put several things in there that are a little bit more applicable. If you're watching this on the standalone video, I'll put a card up in the corner that will link to that video. If you're watching the whole video, then obviously once it gets to that section, or skip ahead in the chapters is an easy way to find that. So the things that have helped me the most in the shop are everything has a place. It's all organized. I don't have junk drawers. I try to limit the amount of flat surfaces that are in the shop. And I, since I have a smaller shop, I purge often and ruthlessly. If it's a tool that hasn't been used in a really long time, it's gone. If it's a scrap piece, it's gone. Like, I get rid of things a lot, and that has helped tremendously. I'm in the process of building up a YouTube channel for the build videos, so I have to keep my floor pretty clean to be able to move the camera around a lot. So I'm a little bit forced to do that part, so that might not be as pressing of a need. It might be a little bit more of a quality of life for you than it is for me. But I have to keep things clean in order to actually be able to do the videos. So I have some future episodes coming out with Dave and Matt from Freedom Concrete. They talk about it quite a bit. The recent episode with Chuck, he talks about it. And Henry from HK Concrete Design, he talks about it quite a bit too. So look out for those episodes where they go into those details. Cleaning up on a regular interval might seem kind of trivial, but it was helpful for me. I do it after every project. I try to do it at the end of each day, but depending on when that day ends, sometimes it's better for me just to get out of the shop than to go through the trouble of cleaning. And then something that Chuck recommends in a recent episode that I've started doing is to clean up as you go. So if you walk by something and it's in a place that it shouldn't be, just pick it up and bring it with you and put it away as you move throughout the shop. So something that is really, really helpful for me that's being in a small shop is if it can have wheels on it, I put wheels on it. I utilize vertical space as well as I possibly can. Vertical space is amazing. And also using the ceiling, like we took the ceiling out of the shop and I've stored things up on the rafters and all sorts of things. So I think the ceiling is probably one place that we usually forget to use, but that has opened up a lot of space in my shop is being able to use that. Another thing is using barn doors, the sliding barn doors that people have started using in their houses and all that. That has been a huge, huge helpful in my shop because I can take a wall, I can mount things on that wall, and then I can put a sliding barn door in front of that. So I have essentially have the same wall twice. You can also use those in front of like air compressors, things like that, where you still need to get to that area. You don't want to completely block it in. And then you can just slide the door out of the way. It's been really, really, really helpful. And they're not that expensive. You can get some pretty decent ones, some pretty big ones on Etsy, for example. Or if you're a metal fabrication shop, you can obviously just make your own. What I've found is I need to make everything as convenient as possible, which sounds kind of lazy, but I will procrastinate if it's like, I need this thing that's buried underneath five other things. Well, I'm going to put that sucker off as long as I can. So I've started to make things as convenient as humanly possible. And that has made a huge improvement with the speed at which I can move, because it's just bam, 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 bam. There is no waiting to do something, because it's right there. It's where I need it. And it just makes everything seamless. The other thing that has helped me a lot, maybe the most in this category, is making a space that I just absolutely love being in. The shop is in pretty much complete disarray right now because it's at the end of a project. I just got the King's card in, and I'm doing a video for Josh on that. And so there's just stuff everywhere. That might mean you have to take a couple weekends or some downtime to work on those quality of life projects. I've had to take many, many evenings and many weekends to do some of those projects that just make me walk into the shop and be so happy to be in there. I've made it pretty. It's still a work in progress, but I like being in a shop that I find aesthetically pleasing. You might not be able to do that because of your setup, or maybe your landlord doesn't allow you to do certain things. So I understand that there are limitations. It's just, I would consider taking a look at it. It was something that's helped considerably for me. I like being in the shop. And if you don't like being there, you're probably going to find excuses not to be in there, or procrastinate, or all sorts of other things that we weird humans do. I cannot believe that I forgot to put this in the shop section. It's one of the things where I don't use it every single time that I make a project, but when I do, it is so, so easy to clean up. I use, or have started to use, a different type of screw or a different colored screw every time I switch screw sizes. The reason that I remembered to record this real quickly before the episode came out was I just did a project, a vanity. And in that vanity, there's four different length screws. I was using pocket hole screws in some cases and needed some, so I had a different type right there. And then I also had some other areas of the project where I really needed really, really long screws. So just built into that project, I used two different types of Craig screws. I used the typical zinc-coated ones. I used a little bit longer screw, so I switched to the blue-coated screw. And then there were two other cabinet screws that I needed to use as well. The only time I will use the same screw, the same color, same type or whatever, is if there's a big difference between the sizes of them. So for example, in this vanity, I had a really short 1-inch Craig screw, the zinc-coated, one that was like an inch and a half or 2-inch blue coat Craig screw, and then an 1¾-inch cabinet screw. I might be getting some of these measurements wrong, but you get the point. And I used the cabinet screw again, but that was a 3⅛ length, so that when I was going through and gathering up all the screws, it's very easy to tell the difference between those. But the shorter screws, where you have to hold them up to each other and all that kind of stupid stuff, all I had to do was sort them out by color. And if you're only doing, say, if you only have one screw, then it doesn't really matter. But if you have a project that needs multiple screws and they're different lengths, this is so easy. It's so fast to clean up the screws and get them in the right drawers, the right bins, or however you have it sorted. So this is something that I would really, 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 really recommend utilizing if you find yourself in that predicament. Now for the last and final section is the productive, efficient, and schedule. I kind of smushed all of this into one. just this was, and this ended up being a little bit of a catch-all category, kind of, to so to speak. But the things that have helped me the most with this, and these, a lot of these were mentioned in other sections, but in case this is a standalone video, I'll mention them briefly here, and I'll put cards up in the corner in case anybody wants to watch the full section of that. Is I only check social media and email at certain times, or you could do it where you only do it a certain number of times a day. That worked for me for a little bit. It didn't work as well as only doing it at certain times. That worked out really, really well for me. It was really helpful for getting back time into my schedule. Is just if you check social media fewer times, that's more time you have to spend on other things. Elimination diet or a minimal diet has worked really, really well for me since I don't have to spend as much time on it. I pretty much eat the same things over and over again, mainly Monday through Friday. The fewer decisions you have to make, the more time you can really focus on other things, or the more mental bandwidth, so to speak. Decision fatigue, I think, is the term that is used for that. And so if I can eliminate the number of decisions that I have to make per day, I can use that extra mental bandwidth, I guess we'll call it, on focusing on things that are much more important than, do I want to do ground beef or a steak for dinner or whatever it happens to be. Those are decisions that I can make on Sunday, for example, and then I don't have to worry about it again. The meat's already thawed and I'm off to the race. The other thing that helps me quite a bit with being productive is the waterproof notebooks, like I mentioned before. I have two of them. The reason I have two is because when I have one in the shower, it's obviously going to get wet. So I will write down my notes in that, and then I'll bring it out and I'll set it in the sink so that it can dry. And then I will take the dry one and put it in the shower so that it's already in there for when I need it again. Then I take the one that is drying out when it has dried off, and I'll go take those notes and I'll either tear the pages out if they're full or transfer them to another notebook so that I have them. And then I'll bring that notebook back over to the shower so that it's over there. I used to have it where I only had the one, but I ran into a situation where I would think of something and not have anything to write it down because I hadn't replaced it. This has worked really, really well, is having the two and cycling them out. Like I talked about earlier, scheduling items that are important to me is the best way that I've found to make sure that it gets done. I do this two different ways. One is I have morning and night routines, only so that I don't skip the things that I have decided that are important to me. I decide those things when I'm in a relaxed and mindful state, because if you're in a, I don't want to be making decisions when like I'm lazy or frustrated or rushed. I want to make them when I have a very good handle on things and I can sit there and really decide what's important to me. And then I just add those to my morning or nightly routine so that I make sure that I get them done. The other thing is scheduling times that are important, not on like a morning and nightly routine, but more of a, something that needs to get done or that I want to make sure that I do. So for example, every Friday, so today actually, we have what my daughter has coined Chick-fil-A Day, which is we go to we're not going to Chick-fil-A today, but we pretty much always go to Chick-fil-A after we pick them up from school on Friday afternoons, and we do that every single Friday. We may not eat there, but it's a tradition of ours, I guess. And they love it. They go play on the little playground. It gives Melanie and I some time to spend together while we're there. It's something that we do as a family every single week. Another example is my wife and I have a walk that we schedule together, and we do it every single week. It's nothing gets scheduled during that time. We also have what's called an F&F date. One of the F is food. You can guess the other one. And we do not schedule anything during that time. There are maybe 5% of days a year, for example, where we have to move those, for example, where like say Melanie, my wife, has to go out of town for something, or she has something with reserves, or then we just have no choice but to move it. But we rarely schedule. These are things that are important to us. We schedule them and we make sure that they always get done. I'll finish up the end of this quite nicely at the end with some other schedule things, but those are the things that I've kind of talked about earlier. So shop-related things that are kind of in the productive, efficient are batching. Batching has worked out really, really well for me. There's several different ways to do it. Some people do it where they do a certain thing per day. So for me, like I am in the shop this day. I do digital items this day. That works really, really well for me. For some people, that's not practical because they're in the shop every single day. For me, since I do a lot of the digital side of things and I'm really trying to build that up, is I have to have days that are allocated towards working on computer-related things, editing videos, recording podcasts, and those types of things. You can do it where time blocks is another really good way to do it, where you do X thing during this time. You could do it per task. So I know some shops, they'll go through and they'll do all their mold stuff on one day. They'll go through and they'll cut all their rails. They'll cut all the things that they need to for molds, and they'll assemble all the molds on this day, and then they move on to a different task. When I'm in the shop, I really like doing it batching per project. So I will make as much progress as I can per project and not worry about any other project during that time. I'm not good enough to do the task way of batching. I end up putting pieces in different places. Paperwork gets moved around. It just doesn't really work that well for me. But it may work out great for you. Doing it per project has worked fantastically for me. Another thing that works really, really well for me in the shop is all tools that are needed at an area are at that area and they stay at that area. That means that I have several duplicate tools or tools that are in between the two stations. So since my shop isn't huge, it's a two-car garage, I can place items that are close to two different stations that are used in both places, and that works just fine. But I have several tape measures that get put at, I have one at the table saw, I have one at the miter saw, and then I have one at the workbench, and those don't leave those areas. That's just a simple way of showing how I might have to have those duplicate tools. Now I understand that this can get pretty costly pretty quick. Like if you're talking about like three sets of impact drivers or two different grinders or three different grinders, one on the install truck, you got one in this area. I understand that it can get very expensive very quickly. So I'm not saying that we could do it with everything. I just try and do it as much as possible because of the huge benefit that it has, not wandering around wondering where did I put that tape measure or where is that impact driver. They have a place and it's pretty much always close to where it needs to be used. Cutting down on my walking around, wandering around time has helped a lot. These two things have had a huge impact on my productivity. One is going to sound a little funny, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. Don't you even lie. One is no phone in the bathroom. No phone is allowed to go in the bathroom. That should be pretty obvious why, because you'll go in there and you'll come out 30 minutes later and wonder what the fuck just happened. Now, maybe you don't sit there on social media, but I used to have a problem with that where I would just sit there and just scroll and then wondering where the hell all the time went. I know you people do it. Don't you fucking lie. The other is, I talked about this briefly in one of the other sections, is two phone method. This was brought up in, what book was it? The Productivity Project by Chris Bailey, I'm pretty sure is what it. And the two phone strategy is you can have one phone that has all the thing. You basically turn it into like an iTouch, I think is what they were called. It's nothing but the social media, your email, all the dumb stuff that takes up your time is on that phone. And none of that stuff is on your phone that you're out carrying around with you. So I have taken all the social media off, all the email apps off of my main phone, the one that I carry around with me all the time. That has crashed my amount of time that I spend on the phone. I mean, it has gone down like 60 to 80%, sometimes even more per day. That has had a huge impact on how much time I spend on the phones. The other thing that has helped quite a bit with the phone on both of my phones, one's just an old phone and that I had before and I just didn't trade it in when I got a new phone, is something that helped me quite a bit was picking what's on my home screen or on the, I guess Apple doesn't really have a home screen anymore. So the very far left screen that I can put apps and all on, I was very, very careful what I put on mine. On mine, I have my calendar up at the top, and I have my screen time at the bottom. So that is just staring me in the face. I cannot open my phone without seeing how much time I have spent on it. And when you open that up and you see that you're like, it's not even noon yet and you've already spent like an hour on your phone, you're like, fuck, that'll get you to stop using your phone the rest of the day. Well, at least it does for me. That has helped a lot. The other thing is I made my own phone wallpapers. I just looked up the resolution for my phones online and then I just imported those settings into basically PowerPoint and changed the size of the slide and then just put the text on there that I want. On my main phone, some of you are going to find this a little aggressive, but on my main phone, it says, don't be a lazy, worthless, weak fucking loser. I'm personally very motivated by the negative. Some of you, not so much. So you probably wouldn't put that on yours. But me opening it up and seeing that has helped me control my phone usage a lot. On my entertainment one, it says, have you earned it? So, and if I haven't, I don't open the phone. Now, I do have to go on there from time to time to upload things on social and things like that because that's part of my quote-unquote job. But I have to be mindful of it and opening it when I see that, have you earned it? You really have to answer that question unless you're just going to look away from the phone and be in denial. All right, so to end this section, I'll talk about scheduling type stuff just a little bit. Now, since there's an infinite number of options out there as far as schedules are concerned, I stopped listening to all the advice a while ago, and that has helped so much because everybody has an opinion on what you should do with your schedule. You should do this in the morning, you should do this at night, you should wake up at this time or not, you should work this many hours or not. And I tried a whole bunch of those things and I was always frustrated. And so as soon as I really started to just paying very close attention to, like, almost excessively so, to how I work and how I prefer things and talking through it with certain people, I just started doing what I felt really worked really well for me. And this was not something that came very easily to me. It took many, 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 many months for me to kind of slowly start dialing it into the schedule that worked for me. So for example, like some people like to work at night. Okay, so then work at night. Like, that's fine. If you want to work 7 days a week, but fewer days throughout the week, then fine, do that. If you want to work a shit ton of hours, do that. If you only want to work 9 to 5 and no weekends, do that. Nobody's going to have a silver bullet for you. And as soon as I figured out, which sounds so stupid saying it out loud, that I just need to pick something that works really, really well for me and screw all the quote-unquote advice out there, man, that helped me so much. So one of the things that I came across recently is there's just so much research out there to support that if you're really just really going hard and focusing on the important things on what you're trying to accomplish, that it really doesn't matter how you schedule your day per se. The main thing is just really going at it hard in the times that you're supposed to be and not being on social media, and that you really can accomplish so many amazing things by being focused on what you need to be focused on and not worrying about, I should be doing this thing during this time. Or it's hard. It's one of those things where you can't appreciate it until, I don't know, until you try it. It's kind of one of that ubiquitous, you have to get up at 5 a.m. recommendation that seems to be all, it's just everywhere. Everybody says get up early. Well, there are billionaires that don't get up until 10 or 11. So clearly that's not true. If it's true for you, then awesome. I mean, go all in and just kick some ass. But there's too much evidence to support that it's not a universal. So what are some examples of some of these things? So more books, obviously. One of the books that I found fascinating to see how many different schedules are out there for people that we've found iconic throughout time is Daily Rituals by Mason Curry. Fantastic, fantastic book. It's so interesting seeing how many different people have done things in so many different ways. If you do want to look at the different timing of things, when you will probably do better at different tasks, When by Daniel Pink is a really, really good book. And then this book was a little interesting. Of the two, I would do the one by Daniel Pink, but this one was pretty good too, is The Power of When by Michael Bruse, I think is how you say his name. And then The Productivity Project, which I can't find right now, by Chris Bailey is really good from a productivity standpoint, scheduling, and so is Hyperfocus by Chris Bailey, and Deep Work, I'm still working through right now, by Cal Newport, is really, really good with this. It really helps you kind of zero in on what's important. So just as an example, I'm not saying that you need to do anything remotely close to the schedule that I've found that's started working pretty well for me, is I work pretty much 7 days a week, but I don't work like 8 or 9 hours a day. I get quite a bit of work done each day, but I like working each day because it keeps me, inertia is a really big thing for me. So if I stop, there's a really good chance that I'll stay stopped for a while. So if I just keep doing at least a little something every day, that works really, really well for me. So in the morning, I make sure that I clean up around the house. I do dishes and laundry and things like that. Those are things that I've done to help take any of the burden off of my wife. That's just something simple that I can do. So I do those in the morning. I also check on all the 100 million plants that we have. I help with the kids, and then we also take the kids to school in the morning whenever possible. I go with her to do that. I also do the cold plunge in the morning. I'm going to play around with the time on that a little bit since it's starting to get warmer now. Doing it in the morning, I'll be able to do it in the bathtub, so I'll just need to do ice. So that changes things a little bit. And then on Monday and Tuesday right now, I do all computer work. And then Monday, Thursday, and Friday is all in the shop, and then Saturdays and Sundays are kind of flex days. Whatever I need to work on the most is what I work on during those days. To close out the day, for example, I'll also check on any dishes that I need to do, clean up around the house, anything that I need to do to help with the kids if I'm inside on that day. I make sure that I put out any clothes out, anything that I need for the cold plunge, I'd put that out. If I need to thaw any meat for the next couple of days, I make sure that I do that. I do the gut smashing and a hot shower. If I do that, then those are all done in the evening. But that's basically my day in a nutshell. In the morning, I also cook breakfast for the wife and I. We pretty much eat the same breakfast Monday through Friday every single day. That's just my way of trying to make sure that she gets a really good, high quality meal in the morning and that we're ready for the day. I'd love to hear if there is anything that has been exponentially more helpful to you than, say, other things, whether it's a traditional advice or something that's a little bit more obscure. Doing that in the YouTube comments or in the forums on Facebook or messaging me directly would be really, really appreciated. I'm always looking for new ways to improve, and I think doing this together is probably the best way to do that. If one of the books or resources mentioned in the episode would be beneficial to you or someone that you know, and you would like to support this channel, using the affiliate links in the description would be incredibly helpful. Thanks to everyone who listened all the way through. I hope you found something that was beneficial, and I look forward to hearing from you in the next episode. Later. I don't even know how to talk about this part. Motherfucker!
The one of the... Fuck, man, I really gotta just write this down.